Welcome to the Goal Lines Podcast, your Mid-Missouri football guide. If you don't already subscribe, find us on Apple Podcasts and Google Play.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's installment of the News Tribune Football Podcast featuring the Jefferson City Jays. I'm your host, Tony Hawley. I'm sitting here with Jason Strickland of the News Tribune, and before Jason and I start to get things started this week, let's listen to a little bit of Jason's conversation with Jays head coach Scott Bailey.
Scott Hickman this week. As far as their defense, what kind of alignments do you expect to see out of them?
Well, they're base four-man front. So, they'll get into some three-man front also, and if most defenses at this level don't play really alignment defense, they play assignment defense. So where they're standing when the ball snaps sometimes is irrelevant to what their assignment is.
So what do you think are some of the strengths of Hickman's defense that you see?
Well, they got some size up front on the line. That's one thing, you know. First thing you know is they got some dudes up front that are some size, so and then they're athletic. So anytime you're facing somebody that runs real well, plays that you think open at the point of attack and close up pretty quick because of speed.
As far as your offensive line, what do you think is what areas have they improved in the most, do you think?
The biggest thing is being versatile, because we haven't played the same offensive line in 2 weeks in a row yet.
Yeah,
we played a lot of different guys there in the first 5 weeks of the season. So if at some point we can get the five guys in the five roles that fit us best and get them to play over and over again week after week, I think we can get some consistency to it. But being versatile is probably the number one thing that they've been.
All right, that was Jays head coach Scott Bailey. And Jason, I don't think I was surprised by the fact that the Jays were able to beat Capital City last week. I was a little bit surprised by the shutout. So how good did the Jays defense play last week?
Yeah, that was kind of the story of the game, I think, was the defense. And I kind of went more in detail with how they did that in the Sunday story in the News Tribune, when it kind of focused on how they – you know, how they kind of game planned against Capital City. I mean, they're going to come in with their wing tee and they're going to run the ball.
Right.
And I think what maybe was somewhat a surprise is that they did not try to get away from the run at all. They just kept on trying and trying. They didn't try to throw a few passes against the Jays, you know, even though I think they ended up throwing two passes. One of them was batted down. I think a defensive end got in there and got pressure, and he was able to knock it away. And then I know they ran another pass play to where the tight end was actually open. He actually got open down the field, and I think they just overthrew him.
Yeah.
But the thing is, they got him open. It's like, well, maybe try it again.
Right.
But Capital City was determined to keep going with the running game. But Jefferson City had a game plan where fairly simple, stack the box. I mean,
right.
That's what you do. I mean – but they did it in a kind of a different way. They always, you know, run a four-man front, and I know recently they've kind of snuck their middle linebacker up, you know, right up against the line of scrimmage now even this week against Capital City, they had them sometimes line up in a three-point stance just to get that extra push in the middle, and then they would, and then the other two linebackers would control the gaps on each side, and they would just pound the gaps and just not let Capital City run inside on them.
Yeah.
And because they felt confident if Capital City did go outside, they had the speed out there. They trusted their defensive ends to either contain the edge or have their cornerbacks make a play on the outside, and they did that for the most part.
Yeah. And then on the other side of the ball, they were able to score 36 points. So I mean, that's you know, and it sounds like it was a concerted effort to run the ball as well one team's trying to run the ball and can't, one team's trying to run the ball and can, and so the Jays were able to have success in the run game.
Yeah, and talking to Coach Bailey after the game, that's the kind of games he enjoys watching in general.
Sure.
He said he just doesn't really enjoy the college game or the NFL game.
Right.
He has a very run-oriented mindset.
Yeah.
And that's what this game was. It was two teams that like to establish a run. I think Capital City more so than Jefferson City. because Jefferson City has that ability to go to the pass if they need to,
right.
But they don't want to
right.
if they don't have to. And against Capital City, against a defense that has been allowing teams, you know, to average more than a first down per carry, Jefferson City was able to do that in the first half against them. So they established a run early, and they didn't need to stop. So they just kept with it, and it was a big game for David Bethune, who ended up over 180 yards, scored three touchdowns, and they were up 29-0 by halftime. And
yeah.
So it was – and well, 29 is kind of a weird score for the Jays because they had to go for two on their first touchdown. They were without their kicker, Boswell Ahmed, who was playing soccer. So playing a soccer game, I think it started at 5. So,
right.
So he was unable to do the first. They scored a touchdown before he showed up for the game. He was a little bit late. So they ended up scoring the 2-point conversion with, I think, Kavion Pendleton, who actually had a pretty good game, too. I think that's one thing that has helped Jefferson City, where they've gotten more guys involved in the run game. Kavion Pendleton was kind of that guy this week, and they've gotten Jacob Duke, who's more of the fullback, and he kind of gets those tough yards on the inside, and the same with, I think they're getting Nick Williams in there a little bit. He gets a couple carries every week as well.
Yeah. So that takes Jefferson City to 2-3 now in the season, 2-1 in the CMAC, which, we kind of spotlighted that, last week, I think, in terms of we were entering a stretch where, these were some winnable games in the CMAC, and I think, you wanted to make sure, okay, let's get that first one. Drops Capital City to 0-4 and 0-5 in the CMAC. Now you've got a game coming up Friday night at Hickman, and Hickman's 2-2 and 2-1 in the CMAC. So, again, this was the second week where we were thinking, okay, this could go a long way toward determining who maybe that, lead dog is in the second pack of the CMAC teams this year.
Right. Right now, if you look at it, Helias is up there, and they're kind of running away with it right now. I think Rockbridge is up there as well, and they're going to be, in the running to be one of those first few teams. Right now, with Jefferson City and Hickman being at 2-1, because they're beating the teams that they're expected to beat. Hickman has beaten Capital City and Smith Cotton the last two games they've played. They had their game against Battle canceled. Jefferson City has beaten Capital City and Smith Cotton as well.
Right.
So now they face each other, and now it's okay. This one just kind of determines okay who's gonna take that spot in the conference.
Right. It's we always know that this is one of those historic rivalry games in terms of the fact that they've met 116 times for a long time. It was kind of back and forth and back and forth, but the Jays have had some success as of late against Hickman, haven't they?
Yeah, I think eight straight wins against them, and they just have Hickman just hasn't been able to score against Jefferson City. I know.
Yeah.
I noted in Friday's goal line story is, I think out of those eight, maybe five or six times, Jefferson City has held Hickman to under 10 points.
Yeah.
And just going to practice on Wednesday, wondering if what kind of their defense – and I was able to kind of watch them as they practice against they were setting up the scout team offense for Hickman and practicing defense. And I wondered what kind of their plan would be because, obviously last week they set up a defense to stop the wing tee, and it
sure.
worked. But I saw them kind of running similar things, a similar alignment, up front, even practicing against Hickman's scout offense.
Right.
So maybe it's something that where they're going to, try putting five guys up at the line of scrimmage
sure.
again and seeing if that can work against a team that, spreads it out. They want to, Hickman wants to run the ball, but they spread out teams. They always usually have, three or four, wide receivers. But I think, Jefferson City figures if it worked to stop the run, plugging up that middle. And I think what they're trying to do with putting that linebacker there right on the center is that they want him to get that kind of leverage right in the middle. And if he can disrupt the play,
sure.
Right at the handoff, right when the quarterback gets it.
Right.
I think that, they think that Hickman can just not, get a rhythm going with,
right.
Just stop the play before it starts,
sure.
Essentially.
Yeah. It's a Hickman team that, you know, seems to be maybe, I don't want to say maybe that they've solved something defensively, but it is a team that, you know, gave up, you know, 63 and 68 in the first couple weeks of the season, then has brought it back to, you know, a little more reasonable 27 and 16 the last couple weeks. I think that's a byproduct of maybe who they've played the last couple weeks in terms of, you know, they played some real heavy hitters the first 2 weeks, and now it's the competition's been a little more reasonable the last 2 weeks. But they have shown that, you know, it's they can give up points this season. So the Jays, you know, as an offense that maybe is kind of starting to solve things, might be able to, you know, be able to have some success this week.
Right. I think first week they allowed 63. Second week they played Helias, allowed 68.
Right.
But then when you know, going against teams like, you know, Capital City and then Smith Cotton, you expect you don't want to allow 60 points again, right? But still allowing, you know, just seeing how Jefferson City was able to stop, you know, shut out Capital City,
right?
And Hickman allowing 27 points to that team, and Capital City was able to run against them.
Yeah.
So I think that's probably a good sign that you know, Jefferson City, I think a lot of, you know, and really what the focus was of this preview and the goal line section was, is Jefferson City's success, whether they win or lose, or even if it's a close game like against Rockbridge, they were to run it a little bit better, and it was a close game. They had the chance to win.
Right.
When the run game is going, when they establish it early and they can just keep with it and they don't have to go to the pass, they win games. It's as simple as that.
Right.
So you look at how Hickman has struggled against the run. That's just a good matchup for Jefferson City to try to win, you know,
right,
three in a row. I mean,
yeah,
this was a schedule to where we knew that this was the stretch in the schedule they had, you know, more likely to get wins.
Right.
But you still have to go out and do it.
Right.
You know, beat the teams that you think you can win and have a better chance to win, and they've done it. So now they have to just finish that off.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if we mentioned the time, but it's 7 o'clock Friday for the start. It's going to be at Hickman, obviously, as we mentioned, but that brings into the whole COVID and Columbia situation. So what's the attendance going to be like for this one?
Yeah, well, Jefferson City has already had to kind of face the restrictions of Boone County once going to Rockbridge. So it'll be the same with Hickman. Each player gets one card, so it'll be, you know, a limited crowd to just, you know, a few parents out there.
Right.
You know, but it's for both sides.
I mean,
you know, going to Rockbridge, the crowd on that side was, you know, limited. I think the one still on the home side.
Right.
You know, so it's not like either one gets an advantage.
Sure.
So, you know, they stayed very distant. Actually, they had it marked off in the bleachers at Rockbridge, and Jefferson City had their you know, crowd of family there, and it'll be the same situation.
Right.
Going back to Columbia against Hickman.
As far as we'll get away from this week for a little bit, from the standpoint of, we do have some scheduling news in terms of later on in the season. The Jays have kind of tweaked something in terms of the week 9 game, haven't they?
Yeah, they get to stay in mid-Missouri a little bit more. I mean, their schedule is already going to be like that, you know, having the conference, having the Central Missouri Activities Conference.
Yeah.
But now playing their one St. Louis team left on their schedule for Zumo West, is now going to come to Atkins Stadium week 9, or at least that's the schedule now. It was originally scheduled a road game for Jefferson City. But since Capital City, I think, hosts Kirksville week 9, so the stadium is being used that Friday. So Jefferson City and Ford Zumo West are now scheduled to play that Thursday, which is October 22nd at 7 p.m.
Okay. As long as we're talking about later on in the season, we might as well talk about late in the season, from the standpoint of, some interesting news came out this week in terms of maybe not affecting the Jays unless they get hot and make a postseason run, but definitely affecting their home stadium of Atkins Stadium.
Yeah, the football championship's going to be coming to Jefferson City. Jefferson City, Helias, and Blair Oaks are going to be sharing those duties. They haven't decided which games. I think they have an idea which classes are going to be at which stadiums.
Sure.
They haven't officially set those, because obviously those three teams could be in the Class 5 or Class 4 or Class 3 title game. So if they are, then they cannot
play at their home stadium.
Yep, so right. that'll determine that. Obviously, we know that, you know, with Jefferson City in Class 5, you never know. They're in their district. I mean, they're in a very competitive district to where I think just about anybody can win there. So you never know. Jefferson City could be in that situation to where if they get to that point, then you won't be able to play it at Atkins Stadium. You'll either have to go to Helias, which would be quite strange, I think,
right.
or go to Blair Oaks. But yeah, Faroe Field has been the home of the state championships. But I think probably a combination of, you know, the SEC schedule, how that's been kind of laid out, you know, with Missouri.
Right.
I think it would be difficult for Faroe Field to host the state championships, and also there would be more, you know, strict policies on attendance.
Right.
So Jefferson City was just a good place to start.
Yeah.
As far as rescheduling that,
I think it speaks to too as well. You know, I think it's, you know, you think about. I'm old, so I remember this not too long ago where you realize, okay, you know what, we had one good stadium in Atkins Stadium, and then it was, you know, Helias was playing at Atkins Stadium, didn't have its own stadium, and Blair Oaks was playing back at Lincoln back in the day. So it's not that long ago until you realize that, hey, they've significantly upgraded all three facilities in the last couple of years, and obviously the advent of field turf has kind of helped, you know, everybody be able to kind of, you know, make some real improvements to home fields, but also it speaks to the niceness of all three stadiums and how really all three programs have something to be proud of for just in the fact that you go, you know what, these are some very nice facilities that they all have, and this is the capable of hosting kind of some, you know, elite type events and really being a place where you go, okay, you know what, that'll be a good showcase place for these teams.
Yeah, it's a way for all three of them to kind of, you know, showcase what, you know, what they have, what improvements they've made. I mean, all three of them are great, you know, places.
Yeah, absolutely.
And not just, you know, Atkins Stadium with the improvements they've made, but then you have Ray Hinchin Stadium in Helias, brand new place. It's just a great facility to host something like that. And with Atkins Stadium, you know, Misha, what Aaron Earlywine, you know, the district AD, kind of brought up was that, you know, they host state track. Misha is, very familiar with Atkins Stadium. It can host an event like that if they need to. You know, you have the press box, you have the locker rooms right there. It can host a big event like that. You have plenty of seating because I think as far as that, I think they're leaning towards allowing probably between 1,000 and 1,500 fans if they can into those venues, and all three of them can hold that many.
Right.
So I think it would be, you know, create a nice atmosphere to at least end the season for those teams.
And I think it's exciting that we're even talking about, you know, a postseason and an end of the season type championship game from, you know, if you'd told me this, you know, 2 months ago when we were talking about will we have any football games, will we make it through a season, will we even be able to, you know, get past maybe week two or three on the schedule. I think it's very exciting that we're even having a conversation about, you know, we may be playing some state championships here.
Yeah, at least right now you kind of you want to be cautious and thinking that far ahead because,
right.
I mean, it's still week to week with a lot of teams.
Absolutely.
Just in the regular season. We're, you know, a little over halfway through the regular season right now. And every week there's games being, you know, canceled, postponed, shift, you know, teams are, you know, changing opponents and things like that. Even in the CMAC, it's happened.
Right.
So you want to definitely be, it's exciting news, obviously, for Jefferson City to be able to, and then, you know, Wardsville with Blair Oaks being able to host at least one, you know, championship football game.
Right.
But you don't want to look too far ahead, you know, on that. You just want to be able to get through the season. And then if you get through the regular season, you hope nothing happens.
Right.
In district play, you know, because I know that's the thing. If a team has to cancel a district game, I mean, your season's over. It's
right.
Not just we can just postpone that and play it later in a couple of weeks or something, or choose a different district opponent to play that week. So I think that's going to be the real test with all this, Tony, is when we get to, if we can get through the regular season, which I think we will.
Right.
Once you get into postseason play, it's going to be a whole different situation with trying to, you know, schedule those games.
let's step out of our time machine and stop spending time in the future, and let's return to the present day, and let's get to the prediction point of the podcast and just go ask you how you see Friday's game against Hickman playing out.
Yeah, just looking at the matchup, I wasn't quite sure with last week with Capital City. I thought maybe the Cavaliers would be able to run the ball a little bit more, and since they weren't, Jeff said he got a shutout. I think that's a – but it was still a good sign for their defense, just looking at first half to second half. Didn't allow positive yards for Capital City in the second half.
Yep.
I think that's a good sign going into the Hickman game. So I think that kind of continues. Jefferson City will, I think, get a big lead early and kind of coast a little bit, just like they did against Capital City. So I'm going to say 35-6, Jefferson City with the win.
All right. Well, that should do it for this week. For Jason Strickland, I'm Tony Hawley saying thanks for listening.